Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome in to another episode of the Friday Show here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMelt57. And of course, our very own Eric from Chicago, Eric Gegenheimer, is with me again as well. We're back to our regularly scheduled offseason programming following the breaking news that came up earlier in the week. And if you want to listen to our discussion about that, scroll a little bit down wherever it is you're finding this podcast. And we had a little chat on the death of Blackhawks owner and chairman Rocky Wirtz on Tuesday night. But getting back to this episode, our guest this week, he's about as perfect as can be to a Venn diagram 100% overlap of our interests on this podcast. It's Russ Rankin, who most people will probably know him as the longtime lead singer of the punk rock band Good Riddance. But what you may or may not know about him is he's also a hockey scout for the Tri-City Americans in the Western Hockey League, and he's been doing that scouting thing for several years now in conjunction with his music career. The conversation we had with Russ kind of went back and forth between hockey and music and back to hockey and back to music. And we also talked a lot about his fandom as a New Jersey Devils fan and how he became good friends with one of the top players in that franchise's history. Just a really interesting, wide-ranging conversation, and it was a lot of fun. So I'm not going to make you wait anymore. Thank you to Russ for taking the time out to talk with us. Thanks to you for listening. We've got plenty more episodes on the way for the rest of the summer. But for now, let's get to our conversation with Russ. This brain is out of practice. Russ Rankin is with us here on today's Friday show here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. Russ, thanks for taking the time out to join us. How are you doing today?
Doing well, thanks.
Good. So the main things we wanted to talk to you, well, I guess it's two things. It's music and it's hockey, because I feel like you are the perfect overlap of mine and Eric's interest and kind of the general theme of the site at times with punk rock and hockey together. And so I guess, but with those two, seems like those being two of the biggest things in your life, which one came first?
I'd have to say hockey. Like I was first, I mean, this is going to date me, but my first introduction to hockey was the 1980 Winter Olympics.
Okay.
You know, really small kid watching those with my parents, and I'd never seen ice hockey before. And I remember being just struck with the speed and the color and the violence. And, you know, I was pretty young, but I already was like, this is amazing. But then it was pretty spotty after that. And then, you know, a few years later, I got into punk rock, probably like 1983. So hockey was the first thing. And, yeah.
Did you, growing up, did you know anybody? Was there any type of hockey team like at your high school in your area? You grew up in Santa Cruz, California,
yeah.
Which for anybody who doesn't know, that's what, like an hour and a half south of San Francisco?
Yeah.
Would you consider that Central California or Northern California?
Northern California.
Northern California. Did your high school like have a hockey team? Did you know any kids that played hockey when you were growing up?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, because I know now, obviously, you know, that with the Sharks being there, that kind of changed everything. And there's lots of good Northern California hockey players. But so when was the first time you actually saw like hockey in person in real life, like right in front of you?
I think probably at some point in the late 80s or early 90s, I think that there was some buzz starting to gather about bringing a team to the Bay Area. There had been a team, you know, in the 60s and 70s, and it was a train wreck and nobody went. And so everybody thought, well, why would it work this time? But there was some groundswell about the NHL expanding and bringing a team to the Bay Area, specifically San Jose. And they had, I think to that end, there was a couple of like preseason games up at the arena where the Golden State Warriors used to play in Oakland. And I went up to there, to that place to see the Pittsburgh Penguins and somebody else. I don't remember. It was quite a long time ago. That was the first like live hockey I ever saw.
Was there something in particular that changed that got hockey on people's radars out there? Like, cause for me, being a kid who grew up predominantly in the 90s, like I feel like the Mighty Ducks movies were a big thing, that after those movies came out, it seemed like every kid in our neighborhood got rollerblades and a hockey stick and we played street hockey. Was there something similar like that in or around Santa Cruz?
No, and probably still isn't. Like Santa Cruz is like I said, it's a small beach town. But okay. It's 20 to 30 minutes away from downtown San Jose, just over the San Jose's in the valley, just like over the mountain. So San Jose, there was two ice rinks in San Jose that had been there since I was a kid. And I think that maybe the Mighty Ducks movie might have something to do with it. I know that California generally had a huge uptick in interest in hockey when Gretzky was traded to the Kings in 1988. Suddenly there's tons more rinks. Suddenly like younger athletic kids that might've been playing baseball or football are like, hey, I want to play this. That's cooler. So that had already kind of happened and was gestating up here. Not so much, but I think the interest was there. And when the league expanded into the, to include the San Jose Sharks, like the fan response was immediate and it was overwhelming. And so it was once the Sharks actually were playing here, things really started to take off, at least like they probably had been in Southern California for quite a while, but up here closer to me, that's when things really started taking off.
At what point did it seem like music kind of took over your life at some point? Well, I shouldn't say, maybe it did take over your life. I guess I'll let you answer that. But it seemed like music became a significant part of your life as well. When did that become – how you said it was a few years after you discovered hockey that music came in. And did it become like the primary part of your life?
I mean, for the most of the 80s, I was just a kid that surfed and skateboarded and listened to punk rock. Early 90s, I got a band going and we were hustling and working hard, and then around 1994 it paid off and we started communicating with Fat Records and then pretty quickly we all had to quit our jobs and just do that. And that was pretty crazy time. We suddenly had all these tours lining up and all these opportunities that we didn't have before, and so we became like a full-time band. I had become a Devils fan in 1988. So I still watched whenever I could. I still kept track of what was going on, with the Devils specifically, but just NHL in general. And, any chance that I got to watch games on television, which was usually ESPN was putting games on back then, I would do that. And then when the Sharks came, the first two seasons were basically in San Francisco, like, or they're pretty far. They played this at this really old barn called the Cow Palace. And
yes,
my mom and I went to a few of those games, like several games each of the first two seasons. But then the third season, they began in their own arena in downtown San Jose. And we had season tickets since then. So I was going to quite a few games.
So this is one thing I've always been curious about with people who are in band, musicians who are in bands, that when you're a touring artist, like it seems like watching, you know, the majority of your shows are probably at night. So it's probably hard to watch hockey games because you're literally working during the games. But was there ever any, did you ever get any like any sort of scheduling quirks where like, well, you know, the Devils are going to be playing in Chicago. Maybe we can call up Bottom Lounge and play the night before in Chicago somewhere, and then the next night we'll go watch the Devils in the United Center or whatever. Did anything like that ever happen fortuitously for you?
Yeah, I've been able to watch some games around touring. I mean, my band would never do anything just for me to watch a hockey game. Like they don't, they could give a fuck. But
right,
I've been able to do it. Like we were recording our album, Symptoms of a Leveling Spirit, in Colorado. And I was really lucky. I'm still lucky. Like I have a good friend who played in the NHL for a long time, and he was playing for the Devils, and he got us tickets. They were playing, they were in Denver playing the Avalanche. And so he got us tickets. And so we basically wrapped early one night at the studio, and my whole band drove down to go watch that game. So that was really cool. We were playing in a River du Loup, Quebec one night, and I was across the parking lot from the club. There was an arena and all these cars in the parking lot. And I was like, oh, maybe there's a game on. I didn't know what league or anything. So I walked over there, paid, got it, went inside. And then the first face off, it was just a line brawl, second face off line brawl. And I thought, I realized what league I was watching, and people were going crazy, but I was like, this is just stupid. This isn't even hockey. Like, what is going on? And, just things like that. Been able to go to a bunch of junior games, Seattle Thunderbirds a lot when we used to play Seattle. I would basically go to the game, and then, you know, knew that we were playing last. And so kind of leave halfway through the second period, or maybe second intermission, go back to the club, or Portland, same thing. Vancouver, the same thing with the Giants. And I actually did go to a Blackhawks game, one time like it was like the Kyle Calder, Eric Daze era.
There you go.
And so it was sit wherever you want kind of thing. Uh-huh. And, but it was a really cool building. I had fun going to that game, but you know, just a few years after that, you couldn't get tickets to the Blackhawks.
Right.
No, that's the solid streak began. Yeah. Have you been able to convert any of your band members at all? Have you gotten them? Do they come with you sometimes, or is it kind of just a solo thing for you?
My bass player's into it. He married a girl from Montreal, so he became a Habs fan just kind of by default. He married into it. So yeah. They both follow Habs social media. They watch all the Habs games when they can. They go to when the Habs come that one time a year to San Jose, they come and they're all their Habs gear. So he's into it. He gets it. Like he watches games. I don't think he's as nuts about it as I am, but he kind of has to. He married into the Habs thing, so he's in.
So go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Dave.
So like you talked a lot about your music background, and that was kind of the first job you had. You mentioned you guys, when Good Riddance started touring, you had to quit all your other jobs so you could take the band on tour. When did the other reason we wanted to talk to you, though, is because you are a hockey scout. And it seems like those are two different worlds that don't always overlap much, especially in the punk rock genre. So how did the hockey scout world come about?
Well, for years, I became, you know, quickly infatuated with hockey and studied it and would watch every game I could. And I had, you know, my friends would always be like, man, you should just get a job in hockey. Like, you can't stop talking about it. And so I thought about it, and I'm like, well, I'm not good enough of a player to ever do that professionally, but maybe I could work in hockey another way. And I took an online course, probably like 2006, maybe, Sports Management Worldwide had an online course. It was 8 weeks for scouting, and it was really interesting. And when I was done with it, I had contacted my friend, you know, that played in the league. And I'm like, well, what should I do now? Like, what would you do if you were me? And it was really fortuitous, because at that time, kind of mid late 2000s, California players were starting to trickle their way up to the Western Hockey League just a little bit, you know, which is Western Hockey League's primarily like Western Canadian players only. Mm-hmm. But there was a few, like maybe an Arizona kid here or there, California kids, Colorado. It was just starting. And my friend was part owner of a team in the Western Hockey League, the Kootenai Ice. And so he's like, well, let me talk to my GM and we'll see. And then the GM called me. And what the advantage for them was, they had a set of eyes in California that could go watch these players, and they didn't have to pay to send anybody down. And the advantage for me was getting my foot in the door in a pretty prestigious league. And so it worked out, and I started scouting California for the Kootenai Ice in 2007. So I would basically go travel to Southern California a lot or over here to San Jose and just watch the Bantam AAA teams, because the Western Hockey League draft is Bantam draft. So you'd watch Bantams for that year's draft and then also watch maybe some minor or major midget. Just look for anybody who maybe grew late or slipped through the cracks so that you could add to your list. Also, I just started going to the rinks all the time or all around California.
So you mentioned a couple times the player that you're friends with. It's referenced in the article on The Athletic. Do you mind if we talk about who it is?
No, that's okay.
No, so I mean, it's Scott Niedermeyer, who most of us are familiar with as being a fantastic defenseman.
Pretty
and then
good.
That was also the comp. That was pretty good. That was the that was the comp we heard for years, at least, you know, around here for Duncan Keith. Was, you know, everybody kind of compared him to Niedermeyer, and Duncan Keith is at his own pretty good career
in
too.
Duncan Keith's dreams.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, how did you come to kind of become friends with Scott Niedermeyer in the first place?
Well, I was so back before the internet and everything, like we had a P.O. box and we would get fan mail. Like people, fans of our band would actually write physical letters and send them to us. And I guess it had got out that I was a Devils fan. And somebody wrote us from New Jersey, and they had gone to one of these like meet the Devils at the mall, where like Devils players that are signing stuff. And Brian Ralston was there, and the person who had written us told me in the letter that they were wearing a Down by Law shirt, and that Brian Ralston was like, "Oh, Down by Law, I like that band." And so the person who wrote me said, "Hey, you should send Brian Ralston some of your stuff." So I had Fat Records send like t-shirts, CDs, all this stuff to Brian Ralston, care of the Devils. So what happened was, I think at the time he and Scott were living together, and they both watched a lot of snowboarding videos, which is probably where they heard this music. And Brian Ralston I never heard from him, but I got a letter back from Scott Niedermeyer. And then shortly after that, I got a signed jersey in the mail. And we just, you know, exchanged phone numbers and began, you know, keeping in touch. We're still in touch today. And he was just so gracious always about tickets. And, you know, a few times him and his wife would come to see us play, and I would get them in free, but I think that our tickets probably cost a lot less than NHL tickets, but no, he's been great. He's been a good resource for me, like trying to figure things out as far as the scouting stuff goes. He's a good, really good person, obviously, to bounce things off of, because he's played at the highest level and is now involved in player development and working in the front office. So he's a great resource for hockey. He's just an all around good guy. Like he's just a really good guy.
So I was rereading that article at The Athletic that talked about you and your relationship with Scott Niedermeyer was a big part of it. And Eric and I have talked about this a lot because we're both big punk rock music fans, and trying to figure out like if there's any other current or former hockey players who, or I should say, specified NHL players who are also punk rock fans. Like the only name I could ever come up with is Andrew Ferens. Do you know of any other guys who are in now or were in the NHL who are also big punk rock fans? And if you happen to know a few former Blackhawks, that would be wonderful.
Jose Theodore was a big fan.
Okay,
he would come to our shows in Montreal. Andrew Ferens I've met in Edmonton. There was a kid named Boyd Devereaux who played for the Oilers.
I remember
him. Yeah, Boyd was a big Good Riddance fan. One time we were playing in Phoenix, and we happened to call each other, and I'm like, he's like, "What are you up to?" I'm like, "Oh, we're playing in Phoenix." He's like, "Hey, I'm in Phoenix." He was down there doing some like strength training, so he popped out to the show. It was really funny. He's wearing a suit with a Good Riddance hat at the show. Boyd was great. I think that's pretty much it. As far as people that we know in our orbit who have like come to see us play or and stuff like that.
Because there's, I mean, there's a famous, well, maybe infamous story in Blackhawks lore from, it was like 13 or 14, that Corey Crawford went to a Rise, was spotted at a Rise Against show, and then the next day he showed up in the Blackhawks locker room wearing a boot, and I think there were, I don't know if it was ever officially confirmed anywhere, but the story is that he fell down a flight of stairs and busted his ankle and missed like a month or two right in the middle of the season, right when the Hawks were in their heyday, and that's the closest thing we have to somebody who, on the Blackhawks in the last 20 years who might be into punk rock is Corey Crawford at a Rise Against show. And I know, I believe Nicholas Jalmerson was also friendly with Tim McElrath, their lead singer. And I know it's a band you've interacted with and did, I believe it was backing vocals on a song for them. So that's the only stories we have for his Blackhawks related ones.
I've never heard of any, Blackhawks. Yeah, I never interacted with any of those players. I know that one time we played in Montreal, and Jose Theodore came early to soundcheck, and he played one of our songs on guitar at that show, and then he handed the guitar back to Luke and did a stage dive. And this was like 2002, like his Hart Trophy year. And I thought, man, if anybody from the Habs saw him do a stage dive, they would probably have a heart attack. He was okay.
I've never liked Jose Theodore more than I have right now in this moment. That's a great, yeah.
Yeah.
Middle of his Hart Trophy season, he's doing stage dives. Good for him.
So then what about the reverse? I mean, do you have people that maybe you don't know, bands you aren't familiar with, kind of in the punk community, who, as you're known more and more as kind of like a hockey guy who's in the community, do you have people coming up to you and talking to you about hockey a lot more than maybe you wouldn't expect in certain scenarios?
I mean, in Canada, it's been that way ever since we started playing there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't, like for an example, we just played a couple festivals in Quebec last month. And from the time I showed up to the festival grounds, like all the guys that were working the festival, at least every single one of them came up to talk to me about hockey at least once. And that's just kind of how it goes in Canada. I love it. I'm here for it. I mean, I'll talk hockey all day. I don't care. Other places, not so much.
Yeah. What about other bands? Like, do you, bands you've met for the first time or anything like that? Maybe somebody's opening for you that you haven't played with before and you got to hit it off about that or not so much?
Pretty rarely. There's a few people that we interact with or see out on the road that who I know are, you know, like we know each other are hockey fans. So we'll like go have a hockey talk, but mostly it's just random people at clubs or people at shows.
So kind of in the vein of all the hockey talk, I'm intrigued by the idea of scouting in general in any sport, especially when you're scouting teenagers and pre-professional players and trying to figure out how their skills are going to translate to the professional level. And I feel like I've watched a good amount of hockey in my life, but I also, if I'm watching like a high school game or even some of the junior Knights or Sharks, the games that you've referenced, I don't think I would have any idea how to look at a player and decide this kid has the ability to potentially be an NHL player one day. So is there something that you've learned either through the classes you've taken or just from the repetition of all the hockey that you've watched that kind of helps, kind of explains the science to people who may not be familiar with that science at all?
Yeah, there's a few things. And also, like, my job isn't to see if they're going to play in the NHL. That's someone else's job. My job is to, I work for the Western Hockey League, which is major junior. So I'm trying to project a bantam aged kid who's 14 turning 15. And what are they going to be when they're 17 or 18? And that's about as far as I got to go. So it's not quite the bigger leap. But yeah, you're basically looking for things, specifically looking for things that can't be taught or honed. So, you know, compete, just general athleticism and hockey sense. Cause if a player is good, but their skating's kind of regular, then you know that can be worked on, especially with the coaches that are in the Western Hockey League and the amount of time on ice, like those things can be fine tuned. If a kid already skates great, that's even better, but that's not really a deal breaker for me. a deal breaker for me is bad body language, selfishness, or people that don't have an elite hockey sense. You're looking at a lot of kids that play hockey, and you want to find hockey players, not just people that play hockey.
When you say hockey sense, is that like an idea of like putting yourselves in the right positions and, making the pass on the 2-on-1 when it's there, or is there something more, even more nuanced than that?
It's general awareness, like a sixth sense of like spatial awareness. It's offensive for sure, but also defensive. Does the player know where they're supposed to be in their own zone? Do they know how to read a rush? Do they know who they're supposed to be checking on a face-off? Do they know where they're supposed to go? Just little things like that. Being where the puck's going to be instead of where it is. There's a million cliches about it, but it's something that you generally like by the end of, if I go to see a game and it's two teams, like let's say I'm going to go in September to watch the 09s. The very first game I go to, I have, it's all baseline. I've never seen any of these players before. And by the end of that first game, I'll probably have three players that I think could play in our league. Maybe two or three, okay. And then it just goes from there. And then it's fine tuning those with reports. And then it's also a big part of my job is talking to the families and trying to present the Western Hockey League as a viable path for them. It's really, really tough down here.
So we had talked before a little bit about, there's a big kind of youth boom with hockey when Gretzky came to the Kings. What do you feel like is the state kind of California hockey now? Do you feel like it's pretty healthy? And maybe this might be too soon to ask, but when you see a kid like Zegras come in and kind of be, this early superstar that's kind of coming in Southern California in a market that hasn't really had a huge hockey superstar since Gretzky. Is that something, do you feel like you see the effects of that a little bit, or because your kids are a little bit older that you're scouting, is that a couple years away to where you might see the impact of a player like that?
I think there's probably two ways to answer that. Like, you're right in that the like kids trying to emulate that type of play, it goes on already, but it's probably going to get worse with Zegras. Well, he's fantastic, don't get me wrong, but like there's so many holes in his game. But he's flashy and he's cocky and he's confident, and that's appealing. It's entertaining, and he's got tons of skill. But I feel like a lot of times the tendency for a younger player, and I would probably, if I was in their shoes, I would do the same, is to try to emulate the flashier play.
And so you've got Bantam kids doing the Michigan, huh?
They try. Yeah. they do all that stuff. Like, I mean, I'm an American and I love USA hockey, but it's the trickle down is that like everybody thinks they're Cole Caulfield or Jack Hughes or Trevor Zegras. And I would rather have them balance that out with trying to be like more of a two-way 200-foot player. Like at the end of the day, that's what's going to get guys paid as pros, because you only have the puck a couple minutes a game. And so and you're, most of the time you're playing, you don't have the puck. And if you're not doing anything of value when you don't have the puck, then you're not going to have a job. So, but it's cool. Like, I think it's the cool thing about players like Zegras is it brings attention to the game and it makes it entertaining for people and it makes it something to watch. And so I'm all for that. And he's got a good staff down there. And so I'm sure that the other parts of his game are going to get worked on, because he's already got the hands, he's already got the creativity, and he's already got the confidence, which is, those are great. And so he just needs to round out his game, and then he's going to be an even better player than he is right now, I think.
So I feel like, just because you've mentioned the WHL a few times and we are, I think, almost contractually obligated at this point that did you see Connor Bedard at any point in your scouting days?
No, because I don't watch the I don't watch the Western Hockey League. I mean, I've seen him play on seen him play on TV, but no, like we scout the players that end up there. End up in the Western Hockey League.
So when you're watching, I guess when you're watching a game that you are not scouting, so I guess if you're watching the NHL, do you watch the puck or are you watching something different? It's like kind of an idea of how do you watch how do you watch hockey games in general now?
Scouting has really changed that for me, especially if there's a player that I'm interested in, like if the Carolina Hurricanes come, like I want to watch Sebastian Aho play. I just want to watch his shifts. I want to watch what he does when he doesn't have the puck. And you know, the really, really elite players, I just watch them and I don't watch the puck. Like when the Sharks, like watching, if you watch Logan Couture play, like there's a lot of good takeaways from stuff like that. When you watch really elite players that play a 200-foot game, that have good hockey, that have elite hockey sense, it informs, I think, the way that people can watch hockey going forward, which helps me scouting. But also I've just become accustomed to it, to just focusing on things away from the puck, focusing on body language, focusing on spacing and where players are. And the only time I just turn into like a regular hockey fan is usually when I watch the Devils and then I'm just talking to the television and stuff like that.
Is there,
that's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
Okay. Cause related to that, like, but is there a very specific hockey thing that is your favorite thing to see somebody do? Like, I think like everyone talked about Marian Hossa's all around 200 game. And the one specific skill that he seemed to be really, really good at, and Pavel Datsyuk was in this category as well, was the stick lift when trailing a defender to steal the puck from them. Is there anything that is like, and feel free to get as specific as you want, but is there some specific nuanced part of the game that you see either as a scout or when you're watching the Devils on TV that brings you immense joy?
A really nice no look pass, just having the kind of confidence to look somebody off and send the puck over. And I love defensemen that have good gaps, and I love a defenseman that keeps a good gap if there's a rush coming, and then stands up at the blue line and forces the forward to either throw the puck away or go wide. I love that.
Okay.
So we can talk Devils a little bit too, if you want to. I grew up, I was a big goalie guy. So, I mean, Marty Brodeur, like that was in my wheelhouse. I loved him. The Devils were such a fun team, and they actually reminded me a little bit of kind of when the Blackhawks really started to come into their own with its younger group of kids, and they kind of took a real big leap. And then they went into the playoffs and they maybe won a series. A lot of people thought that they might not win. What did you see? What made them so much fun? What kind of made them an elite team last year?
I don't know that they were an elite team last year, but I, as a fan, like there's so many things to like, and then realizing that it's a little bit ahead of schedule, even like I was happy the last few seasons. I've wanted to watch this young core sort of coalesce and grow together. And to, when that stuff happens, you have to suffer through some pretty, pretty rough times to, it builds a character. And so I wanted to see kind of what they were made of, and with the speed and skill they have now, the games are fun to watch, whether they win or lose. Like it's a really good product on the ice, but I wanted to see what was going to happen as far as like what Fitzgerald is trying to do there with getting this core of talented young players together and then having them grow and like sprinkling in some veterans here and there. And I didn't expect playoffs last year. I mean, once they went on that really 13 game winning streak, I thought, well, they're going to probably get in the playoffs just based on that, just up with points. But I didn't know that they were quite there yet. And then after those first two games against the Rangers, I thought like, this is a wake up call. This is a slap in the face. And this is something that will be painful in the moment, but that this group will put in their back pocket and learn from. And then obviously the series completely changed once the series went to Madison Square Garden. I think that was really cool. So for me, it was like house money. Like they made the playoffs and they won a round like so young and learned so much. So I think it's going to only get better. But I watch all their games and I'm a fan, whether they're good, bad, indifferent. Like I've watched a lot of like pretty rough Devils seasons.
Yeah.
Well, I think anybody who's been a fan of a team for a long time, yeah, we've all been through that at some point or another for sure.
Yeah, it's right now is such an exciting time to be a Devils fan. But it's so funny too, because Devils Twitter, and by Devils Twitter, I just mean the community of people that tweet about the Devils, not the team itself. It's so funny because any little sign of adversity, like the sky is falling, and it's probably like that with any fan base. But the Devils Twitter seems to be particularly unhinged. It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny and it's kind of sad, but yeah, it's a really exciting time for that team. And I remember thinking when the season was over, I was like, well, they got to get, you know, they have Timo Meier is under team control for another year, but it wouldn't be nice to lock him up. And then I thought Jesper Bratt is going to want more money than they're probably willing to give him. He's probably gone. And Fitzgerald found a way to get both those guys locked up, which is just insane. General manager of the year, I think. Should be.
Well, that's what we saw, that a bunch, just having to kind of juggle who you're able to keep and who you're not under the cap, you know, with the Blackhawks. But, you know, they were able
to. Yeah, you have to pay. You win those cups, but it's not sustainable the way the cap is. And so, yeah, watching the Blackhawks went through that. The Kings went through that. The Kings were able to retool a little bit quicker than the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
But every team that has a little bit of a run like that goes through that. Especially these days. And unless you've got a really savvy general manager, it's hard because you have to make some really tough decisions. And watching what happened to the Blackhawks was rough. But also I was like, you know, if you ask a Blackhawks fan, they'll probably be like, well, I'll take a few years of a rebuild because we got three cups. So.
Yeah. It seems like it's the price of admission these days is if your team's going to be really, really good in the NHL, there's going to be hard time. There's going to be players who leave because of they outlive the salary cap. Like I think Tampa's going through that a little bit right now too. Like they lost
Tampa's going through that, and and the Bruins are going through that.
Yeah,
and the sure. Bruins are like the very end of that window with that group, and so it's interesting. Going to be interesting to see what happens with them, because I don't think anybody thought they were going to get bounced in the playoffs the way they did.
So in your scouting,
No, absolutely not.
I was going to say in your scouting, Russ, have there been any players that you saw back when they were like 12, 13, 14 and you saw them back then and then they ended up in the NHL and maybe even on the Devils? Like who were some of your, maybe were the guys that you had identified like, oh, this kid might be good. Do you have any, I guess, success stories or players you're particularly proud of? Like I felt like I saw something there and it was confirmed later.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really think it's a matter of pride. It's like, it doesn't get me anywhere, but like, it's interesting to watch players that are 14. I can tell you, I saw Matt Nieto play for the LA Selects when he was a Bantam, and that was early in my scouting. And I thought this kid could play pro. And who else? I mean, I saw Austin Matthews when he was 14, when he was playing for the Arizona Bobcats. He was probably one of the best players on the ice when I saw him, but I had no idea. He didn't have all the tools he has now. He was kind of gangly back then still, but he had great hands. He had great hands and good hockey sense, but he wasn't like the massive beast of a player he is now. I watched one time the Burnaby Winter Club came down to do a tournament in LA, and I saw Matt Barzal play for them, and I could tell right away that kid was going to play pro. He was the best player on the ice by like a mile. And who else? Kyler Yamamoto, I watched play as a Bantam with the Junior Kings. So that's a kid, he's from Washington State, but he was playing for the Junior Kings, playing Bantam down there. And he just was one of the smartest, most savvy players. He was small, but he was so smart, such a smart player. And I thought to myself that that kid could play in our league, which he did for Spokane. And I also thought he'd probably end up playing pro, and he was a first round pick. So those are just a few.
That gives us a little bit of a segue. There was actually, the Blackhawks have a prospect who's at Rockford right now, who was on the Tri-City Americans the last year. Did you ever see Jalen Lipin play at all?
Yeah, he came to us late. Like he was traded to us from somebody else, and he was injured when we got him. And so last year was like his only real full season with us. Great kid, really good player.
What kind of game does he play? Like what style of game? Is he more like a defensive forward?
I think he's probably a bottom six guy in the NHL, but he can bring everything. Like he can score, he can check. I think he's got all the tools. I don't know that he's a top six guy.
Yeah, I think that's most of the projections that we've seen have him kind of in that vein as well. And like I said, he's in the AHL right now, so I think we're fine. We're going to find out pretty soon if he has a professional career, or I shouldn't.
I mean, I know he's signed. Yeah, he's signed.
Yeah, I meant like the NHL career. I should say not professional, because the NHL is AHL is a professional league too.
In the Western Hockey League, which is in my opinion the best league in the world for players that age.
Mm-hmm.
The best player on any given WHL team most of the time is going to be like a bottom six guy in the NHL. Like the cream really rises to the top. I mean, there's players like Connor Bedard and stuff like that. There are exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Like Connor Bedard is going to get a long, long leash and every chance to succeed with the Blackhawks. Right. Just if nothing else to get people in the seats. But there's, for most of the time, like players that are the best player on any Western Hockey League team are probably not going to immediately be the best player on an NHL team.
So I've got one other curious thing to ask you about, because you've kind of got your feet in these two different worlds, being the lead singer of a punk rock band and being a hockey scout. And maybe the culture is different down in the hockey circles you travel in, but it seems like there's a lot of things at the top of the hockey pyramid in the NHL that the culture within those rooms and those circles is very different than that of what you would find like in punk rock circles. Have you ever had, I don't know if there's been like difficulties or struggles or just things that have been turned you off to kind of navigating those two worlds? Because they seem to be two very different worlds from this perspective, but you're much more into the hockey side of things and the punk rock things than I think either one of us could claim to be.
Yeah, it's a pretty weird culture clash for sure. I sort of just have learned to stay in my lane and to just be a part of, like when it comes to the hockey stuff, and be part of a staff and do what I'm supposed to do. Like my job is to make sure that if my head scout or my GM calls me and asks me about a player from down here, I got to know everything about him. Mm-hmm. and there better be reports on him. So know your area and be in contact with parents and that's it. Yeah, it's a pretty cool mixed bag. Like when every summer we get together at the end of August for training camp up in Washington. And that's the time when our whole staff is together. And it's interesting to meet and hang out with these people that I probably would normally never ever meet or hang out with if I hadn't been involved in hockey. Mm-hmm. So it's a good experience for me just to like be around different types of people, and you know, just not try to pretend like I know about Canadian politics. So I just stay in my lane and be a part of the group.
Yeah, because seem like sports is one of the few areas where you can have people from different backgrounds clash, or I shouldn't say clash, but two people from different backgrounds may be in the same room together. And sorry, Eric, I know you were about to say something.
No, I was going to kind of ask a question in that regard. For anybody who's never seen Russ before, you know, he has lots of tattoos. He has tattoos on his neck. He has, you know, spiky blonde hair. Do you feel like standing out, probably looking different than the typical hockey scout, do you feel like that helps you or that hinders you, or it just depends on the situation?
I don't think it matters. I know my first camp with Kootenai, when I was with the Kootenai Ice, I got a lot of weird looks from the other people on staff. Like, who's this kid from California? Like, look at him. And so basically in this, you know, we'd have scrimmages, and then we'd all get together in a room and go over the scrimmages we just saw. And like, let's rate these players, particularly like the kids we just drafted, and then the camp invites. And I feel like I was during those sessions, I sort of earned my spot as far as like, okay, this person knows enough about hockey to be included in this conversation. And then the Tri-City staff it's even been easier. And so, I think that stuff doesn't really matter once you get down to it. Like, we're the only reason we're all together is to win a Western Hockey League championship and ultimately Memorial Cup. And to that end, this other petty stuff just gets thrown to the side.
Well, Russ, I have to thank you again. You've been very gracious with your time. But before we let you go, we do on our weekly podcast we do during the season, we always talk about food-related items at the end. And I saw in the article from The Athletic that we mentioned that you've been a vegan, I think, for 30 years now. But obviously with your music and hockey jobs, you are a very well-traveled person. I imagine you've been all over the place. So do you have a favorite food item or just a favorite thing that you've encountered anywhere in the world? Is there a specific dish that you've encountered that you really, really like and will tell people about? If you're going to the city, you got to try this thing.
I'm not really a food person.
Like, okay.
I'll shout out the Chicago Diner. How's that?
There we go. That'll work.
One of the greatest places we've ever been.
Okay.
My friend Justin, that's like his favorite. It's a famous, they do like, it's like a diner, but everything's vegan. Yeah. And their milkshakes are like incredible. My wife loves that place too. Yeah. We haven't been there for a little bit, and there's a couple of them now. They opened a second one too.
That's awesome.
Is there anything you've seen, and being a vegan for as long as you have, obviously, like, culturally it's changed a lot and it's a lot more accessible now than it used to be. But have you seen, I mean, back when you were, you know, early days of Good Riddance, you guys were touring and stuff, what kind of vegan stuff would you come across? Or was it basically just like veggie whoppers and french fries and stuff?
Well, back then they didn't even have those. Like, it was back in the day, it was, you know, before the internet and stuff like that and smartphones, it was really just about knowing in a pinch what was vegan at like chain restaurants, which was sort of like this little secret Bible that vegans on tour kind of passed around. And then also because we got a reputation for it, we would show up to a city and there'd be a kid at the show, like when we loaded in, going like, hey, my mom cooked this, or I cooked this for you, or follow me in my car and I'll show you where the co-op is, or like the random little weird hippie health food store. Cause there was no Whole Foods or anything back then. So we would have people that would look after us. Usually in a pinch, you could go to like an Asian or South Asian places that were not really, they don't really have meat in their thing. They just kind of did it to westernize in America. You could get by there, but it's much easier now for sure.
Do you, Jonathan Tate's kind of famously, he went vegan a few years ago and he's kind of overhauled his diet. I know that I would assume even at 14 and 15 years old now, as you're interacting with some of these kids, is that something you're seeing? Are you seeing more kids kind of eat cleaner or eat more vegan?
No idea. No idea.
Okay.
No clue what they eat. Yeah. I know that it's still, you guys talked about the cultural differences. Like, it's still very much, in the hockey world, there's, the protein myth is still pretty relevant as far as like people thinking that you got to eat dead animal pieces to be anything. But it's changing a little bit. I think I know that there was a tournament, there was a midget tournament in LA a few years ago, and my GM and my head scout flew down for it. 'Cause we had like, I think we had like 6 or 7 listed guys at that tournament. And I took him to Veggie Grill, which is a chain of like, kind of like Chicago diner type stuff, like just burgers, fries, stuff like that. And it's really good vegan chain in California. And I took them there, and one of them looked at the menu and like, well, which of the stuff is vegan? I'm like, everything is. And they were like, no way. They couldn't believe it. And they got burgers and they got like a fish sandwich and all this stuff. And they said it was really good. So just kind of trying to open people's eyes to what's out there, to what's possible. But again, like that's really not my purpose with working in hockey. Like I'm there to find players and to be part of a group.
Well, Russ, again, we thank you very much for hopping on the podcast here. It was a lot of nuanced details about your music and hockey background that we were really interested to hear about. And we thank you for sharing them all, and best of luck with everything. You professionally, and best of luck with your Devils. Maybe we'll see Jack Hughes versus Connor Bedard in the Stanley Cup in 3 or 4 years.
I hope the Blackhawks don't ruin him. I hope they don't do what Edmonton did to Connor McDavid. I hope he doesn't get Rick Nashed.
Yeah, we
very much hope the same thing.
Yeah. Thanks again, Eric. Thanks again, Russ.
You're welcome.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.